This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
You're listening to a special presentation from the Kings of Sport. The 2014 Royal Rumble Wrap-Up, powered by Place to Be Nation at placetobenation.com.
Don't try to antagonize me, because you know what? It's not safe for you in this zoo.
Wide, wide world of sports is going on here.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Special edition of the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time. I am your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by my partners in crime, Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa and Marcus Vandenberg. Big night, fellas.
Very big night. Very big Royal Rumble night. Good night of sports and sports entertainment. The Grammys, the Royal Rumble, the Pro Bowl, but I was most excited for the Royal Rumble. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, you know, just off the top, how did you guys spend the evening? Because like you mentioned, it was a pretty big night for sports and pop culture and entertainment. I spent the night, I had the Grammys and the Pro Bowl on the TV flipping back and forth. And then, of course, I had the Royal Rumble on my laptop, powered by the good people at Nefarious Means. So that was, you know, just kind of, what they say, the second screen experience. I had like the 2.5 screen experience. So every 2 minutes, I'm looking back and forth between my laptop and the TV. So that's how I spent the majority of my evening. How did you watch things, Marcus? I guess you were at the office?
No, I was at home. For the last probably, 18, 19 weeks now, we've been working on Sundays in the office. And with no real football on this week, I decided to invite my coworkers over to watch the Rumble. So we actually had the Rumble on TV. And then I had
Did you have a big turnout?
Yeah, we had like 5 people over.
Okay.
We aren't a bit staff in general over at Yahoo, so that's a lot of our guys. So we had the Rumble on the TV, and we had the Pro Bowl on the laptop. And because we're on the West Coast, the Grammys are still on now. So didn't have that issue where we had to flip back and forth between the Grammys and the Rumble because we were 3 hours behind.
So did you guys get a Royal Rumble pool going with you and the Yahoo boys?
No, we did not. The problem was... Two of the guys, including myself, well, three guys, including myself, keep up with the product, and the two other guys don't really watch wrestling anymore. So it wouldn't have been fair to get into a pool. So nobody involved.
There was a bunch of surprises tonight, so we'll get into that in a little bit. But one last thing, real quick, on the Grammys, like the two big takeaways for me were, I love the Grammys as a show. not so much with the awards, but for the performances. I mean, there was a great performance with Daft Punk. Stevie Wonder sat in with him. And Pharrell and Nile Rodgers, they did a Get Lucky, and then they remixed it with one of Stevie's songs. That was cool. And then the craziest thing to me was at the very end, Queen Latifah brought out Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and they did that song. I don't know the name of the song, but it's the one about, you know, gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And
Same Love.
Same Love, yes, yes. And they had, like, all these people, I guess, that, you know, were waiting to get married to a partner of the same sex. So it was, like, at least 20 couples, and they had them like lined up around the stage. And Queen Latifah, I don't know where she got her license, but Queen Latifah married these people. They did the song Same Love, and then Madonna came out and sang and serenaded all the newly married couples. So that was like the weirdest, coolest wedding ceremony ever on TV.
I think being a queen gives her that jurisdiction to where she can marry people. So that's where she got her
she
license.
She didn't get married herself because, you know.
No, she didn't get married. She didn't Okay. This I think this may be the first step toward that, though.
Good. I'm glad for her. It's about time. Embrace it.
Yes, yes. You know, only thing that was missing from that ceremony is after they got married, she should have been like, U-N-I-T-Y.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, the Grammys were great. The Pro Bowl was okay. They're trying something different with Team Dion and Team Jerry Rice. It was more interesting than years past, but it's still the Pro Bowl. Like Marcus said, it's not real football.
A lot of interceptions, a lot of turnovers. Dion looks homeless with that beard. What's going on, man?
Horrible. It's gray and it's white. Groom it, no coloring or anything.
No play for Mr. Gray.
Stash is trash.
Yeah. Walt, hook him up, man.
Yeah, we need Clyde Frazier and Keith Hernandez and Emmett to come holler at him.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about the Pro Bowl is that it came down to the final kick, and Antonio Cromartie did return it for a touchdown. I mean, they were just kind of playing around at the end, but he did officially return it for a touchdown. But that touchdown, they did not count it. And I don't know what the spread was for the Pro Bowl, but I'm sure there's a lot of angry people in Vegas who are like,
yes,
wait a minute, that should have counted.
It did impact the lines in Vegas.
Yeah.
So did they go with a final score of 21-22 and they didn't count it?
They didn't count it.
That is terrible.
Which totally screwed people over. The degenerates who are betting on the Pro Bowl.
I was going to say, you're a degenerate gambler, gambling on the Pro Bowl.
You should bet on wrestling instead, duh.
There's a $50 cap to wrestling bets, though, because, you know, there's so many insiders in wrestling that know.
Yeah. Speaking of wrestling, we're going to go to our wrestling insider, Big Nasty, to take us through the night that was in the Royal Rumble, which just concluded a few hours ago. It was a much hype night, and there were some surprises. There were some things that we pretty much figured going into the event. But take us through it, Alfred, and this is the rare occasion where I actually want to start with what happened on the pre-show, because this was actually a surprise to me.
Well, it really wasn't a surprise to me. The surprise was that this match was on the pre-show, because I thought they would have time to do it at the Royal Rumble. But obviously, well, they would have had time, because Royal Rumble signed off about 20 to 15 minutes early. But Nuage Outlaws against the Brotherhood of Cody Rhodes and Goldust. And if you've been watching the booking, Vicky Guerrero has kind of been stirring the pot between Cody Rhodes and Goldust, saying Royal Rumble is going to be every man for himself. Both of you are going to be in there. A couple of days ago, Goldust sent out a tweet saying he has no interest in fighting his brother. They're always going to be as tight as ever. So you kind of felt that tease coming, that this is going to be where they started feuding. Having said that, New Age Outlaws go against the Brotherhood. It was a pretty good match, very hot match. The crowd very excited to be there, excited for the Royal Rumble, very hot Pennsylvania crowd. The closing spot came when Billy Gunn executed a very well-done secret tag to a tagged in Road Dogg, and Cody Rhodes did not know. He hit the Beautiful Disaster, and as he was getting up, Billy Gunn hit the Fame Asser for the win, and the pop for this win, even though the New Age Outlaws are heel, was incredible. They all counted the three, and they all cheered for the now six-time tag team champions of the world, who are the New Age Outlaws. And now that you see Cody Rhodes and Goldust now going into the Royal Rumble without tag team championships, could be the beginning of a WrestleMania match tease. We might get more into that later. Brother Nate, what do you think about the New Age Outlaws champions in 2014?
Wow. Well, first of all, you mentioned the crowd, and you know, like Marcus had sent us a message on Facebook. He's like, wow, the smarts are really out tonight. It was definitely a smart crowd in Pittsburgh, and you know, they cheered accordingly. And like I said, this was surprising to me, not so much with the teased dissension between the Rhodes brothers or the Brotherhood now, but the fact that they put the belt on. We just did this last week, Marcus. Remember, we looked up the ages?
And I'm actually looking up the ages now. I'm trying to see if Billy Gunn is the oldest tag team champion in WWE history. But continue on.
No. Remember, Ric Flair and Roddy Piper won those titles at one point.
Yeah, well, you got Road Dogg, who I think we looked up, he was 45, and Billy Gunn was 50.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, like it's – and I mean, you know, no disrespect to them because they're in good shape for their age, but it's like I'm intrigued to see where it goes, but I think this is just a quick – little deal to get the belts off of them and drop it to somebody else sooner or later. But if they're going to drop it, I'd rather see them drop it to a team that could actually do something with these belts. You know, not that the tag belts are a top priority, but, you know, you could have gave that to the Usos, throw them a bone.
They could have. And go ahead, Marcus.
I think they're using the New Age Outlaws as a way to get the titles to the Usos, because I don't think they wanted to use Usos going against, you know, babyface. They don't think they wanted to that direction. So I think that's the eventual plan, is to have the Usos get the titles from the New Age Outlaws, and hopefully that will be the end of the Outlaws comeback. Even though, I mean, it's been better than I thought, but it's just still weird. Like, it's 2014 and I'm watching Billy Gunn on my television screen. It's just kind of
that would be the only weird thing, as we saw later on. It's good to be a friend of Triple H.
It is.
Yes, we've always known this. But is it that weird? I mean, Goldust was just champion, and he was around during the same time that the New Age Outlaws were. The 14-year-old kid in me went crazy. I loved seeing this. And again, Billy Gunn still looks very good for his age. You said he was 50? I did not know that. I mean, he looks good for his age. Doesn't look too much different than he did back then. And Road Dogg, I mean, he's always worn that tank top and those baggy pants, so you really can't tell if he's aged. And, you know, they're still very over. They're still one of the more popular tag teams. Even though they turned heel, people were cheering them heavily. I think it's going to make it even a bigger deal if the Usos go over the New Age Outlaws, who are the old school tag team, and the Usos being that new school tag team. And as a note, this is the longest time between tag team championship reigns. I believe 14 years since they last won the tag team titles, and now they're champions in 2014, Marcus.
You know what it is about Goldust? I was watching the hockey game last night with the Kings and the Ducks, and Kiss came out and performed. It's the face paint. The face paint can do wonders. You don't know how old a guy is when he's covered in face paint. So it's the same thing with Goldust, where if you look at him, he looks the same, exactly the same as he did in, you know, 1988 because of the makeup and get up. But yeah, it was an entertaining match. As you mentioned, I'm surprised it wasn't on the main card, especially since they only had four matches. And I'm curious to see what happens now with both teams, how soon they get into the Uso feud and how soon they decide to go the Cody Goldust single route.
The thing that intrigues me, like you mentioned, the face paint does do wonders. Just ask Brother Steve Borden. It can make you look years younger. But the thing that intrigues me is, you know, we've got this deal with the Outlaws. They turned on Punk. They're the heel team. I'm sure they're going to be more ingrained with Triple H as the weeks go on. But that entrance will still get a pop. You know, the tag team champions of the world, that's still going to get a huge reaction, even more so than anything the Usos could generate. So I wonder if they kind of pull back with the shtick, or do they just go full bore and straight up old school New Age Outlaws? Because if they do, I could see a lot of crowds, especially smart crowds like this, cheering for the Outlaws.
Yeah, and that question was answered tonight, Nate, because they've been heel, they turned heel, and they're full-blown. They're with the Authority, yet they came out and still did the same old shtick at the beginning of this pay-per-view. If they were 100% invested in being heels, or at least if WWE was invested in booking them like that, they wouldn't have done any of that. They would have cut a promo on the crowd, on Pittsburgh Steelers or something like that, which is what they used to do when they were originally heels. But no, they dropped that, and they became babyface. They still did show heel tendencies afterwards on the show, where they cut a promo with Renee and said they're going to a celebration party and Renee wasn't invited, just to kind of remind people that they're heels.
If they really wanted to be heels in Pittsburgh, though, they would have brought out Marvin Lewis.
No. Oh, man. They would have. And Marvin Lewis would have led that intro. Exactly, I agree.
Marvin's got two words for you.
No wins.
Okay, I was leaving it open for Marcus. I thought he had something very good.
One last thing about the Billy Gunn thing. You mentioned the age. So Piper and Flair won the World Tag Team Champions.
Right.
They're Billy Gunn's officially the oldest to win the WWE Tag Team Champions, which I just started in 02. So, congrats, okay. I guess.
Billy, congrats. Backhanded little compliment there.
Yeah. Congrats to Billy.
Well, we get into the Royal Rumble match or the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, which kicks off with Daniel Bryan against Bray Wyatt. Now, this was a very hot match. Easily the match of the night. The match that stole the show. It began with Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt brawling exceptionally, I might add. The Wyatts were both thrown out early with Bray Wyatt saying he doesn't need them to fight the war. And they were getting involved outside. The referee threw them out, leaving this a one-on-one match between Daniel and Bray. They really played up Daniel Bryan's concussion in this one with Bray Wyatt working him over, working over his head. At one point, Daniel Bryan locked on the yes lock, and Bray Wyatt bit his way out of it. I haven't really seen this before, but he bit Daniel Bryan's hand in order to get out of the yes lock. The spot of the night came when Daniel Bryan went for a suicide dive, and Bray Wyatt caught Daniel Bryan and hit Sister Abigail against the rails. He then hit Sister Abigail once more and pinned Daniel Bryan clean in the middle of the ring for the win. This match received two This Is Awesome chants. And I know This Is Awesome chants in this day and age have really become played out for fans of chanting for everything. But this match really was truly awesome and the match of the night. So Bray Wyatt wins this match in just over 20 minutes. What did you think about the match, Marcus?
A great match. And early, I mean, it's only 26 days in, but an early match of the year. Candidate for sure. Some of those Bryan spots are hard to watch knowing that he did suffer a concussion. So hopefully everything was okay after that match. But, Bray needed this win. If you were to take this, guy seriously going forward, he needed to really cement himself as a singles wrestler. He's been around, he got hurt, he's sort of in the background, but now it's just finally his coming out party. And, Bryan can afford the loss, as we, saw the rest of the night, that it didn't matter the crowd that he lost. So, good match, and, we'll discuss a little later about which direction you're going with Bray Wyatt, but this was a good start.
Yeah, I thought this was by far the match of the night. It's by far Bray Wyatt's best performance. I compare and contrast this to that god-awful Inferno match, or what was it? Fire match?
SummerSlam.
The Fire.
Yes.
We were there.
Yeah.
It's night and day with this guy. I mean, he's always had excellent promos. He's got the character. But this, to me, was like the first time I looked at the guy and I was like, yeah, this is a guy that can be a top guy, a top heel. This is a guy, if they want to go forward with that proposed Cena program, this is a guy that you can build up to be a foil for John Cena. So I really enjoyed it. Like you said, Marcus, I was a little bit worried with the concussion aspect, but Daniel Bryan's a guy that knows how to protect himself. He made Bray look like $1 million. And the big question to me, though, is like, where do they go with Bryan coming out of this? And I think the Rumble gave us a clue or some answers or some hints, if you will. But this is still, they had him in the opening match, and you didn't really hear from him after this match the rest of the night, and he was still the star of the show.
Yes, that's $1 million question, is what do they do with Daniel Bryan heading out of this match? Because now they have little room for error with only one title. If there's going to be an audible called, which we'll get into a little later, then they got to act swiftly. But yeah, like Marcus and, of course, Nate said, it was a very, very physical match. You talk about the concussion. If you watch this match, there's a lot like those ROH matches Daniel Bryan used to work. Whenever Daniel Bryan gets together with, like, Seth Rollins or Cesaro, you can tell they just kind of throw caution to the wind. They don't work that typical WWE-style match. They just start beating the hell out of each other. And that's what they did here. Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt were brawling, and, I mean, it was a brawl. And that was one of the elements that, A, I liked from a visual creative standpoint, but, B, kind of made me uncomfortable knowing that Daniel Bryan is just days removed from a concussion. So, very good match, and we'll see what they do with Daniel Bryan from here. From this match, they go backstage. Paul Heyman cuts a promo with Renee Young. Very good, as always. Calls Brock Lesnar Brock the Unmerciful, and we get into Brock Lesnar against The Big Show. Now, this is a match, if you saw Brock Lesnar in The Big Show, the feud, the build up to this match was that Big Show was just tossing Brock Lesnar around. Nobody had manhandled Brock Lesnar the way Big Show did. And you knew that these guys at this point in their careers, being big heavyweights, couldn't really have like a 30-minute wrestling classic, but they could have maybe a brawl. Well, before the bell even rings, Brock Lesnar pounces Big Show, takes him down, ground and pound, and beats the hell out of him with a steel chair. I mean, just pummels the Big Show with the steel chair. And at one point, Big Show is able to get back onto his feet. When they finally start the match, Big Show punches Brock Lesnar, dazing him. And Brock Lesnar's barely able to walk, so Big Show is presented with a little bit of a fighting chance, but it's a limited comeback because Brock Lesnar hits the F5 out of nowhere. I mean, just lifts Big Show up, looks like he's about to tumble and fall at one point, but keeps his balance and hits an F5 for the win. And after the match, he goes right back to work with the steel chair, literally breaking the steel chair on the Big Show's body. You get to see these close-ups of the Big Show with all these welts on him from the steel chair shots. And I think this match accomplished what it needed to. Brock Lesnar wins in 2 minutes and 1 second, a very short match, but one where Brock Lesnar had most of the offense. And if Brock Lesnar is going to face The Undertaker like we think he is, he looks dominant. Nate, what did you think about this match?
Oh, man. This was, it was one of those moments where I looked up to check out what was going on at the Pro Bowl, and I looked back down, and Brock Lesnar's got his hand raised. I'm like, what the hell just happened? But you're right. You know, from what I saw in the replays and everything, it was a great way to establish Brock as the monster that he is. I mean, that's the one thing I can say since Brock has been back, for the past couple months, just beating down Mark Henry, who was strong at one point. And then, they gave Big Show a little bit of, that believability on Raw. But then tonight, it was all Brock. And this kind of cemented in my mind that they're not going to hotshot the deal with Sting if they get Sting signed anytime soon, because, you've got a match right now. You've got a character that's hot, a character that's still fresh to most of the audience in Brock Lesnar, and that's the direction you should be going towards.
This is the Brock Lesnar I think we all wanted to see 2 years ago now when he first came back, and, he came back and lost to Cena, and that sort of took a lot of his momentum away, but I think he's earned it back. I didn't like how long the post-match beatdown went on. It just felt like they were stalling. And considering that they only had 4 matches, I mean, there's no reason to stall. Just throw another match out there if you're short on time. But, I'm curious to see how this is going to lead to The Undertaker. A part of me thinks they might have to call an audible to please the fans, but we'll get into Daniel Bryan thing later. But a good match for Lesnar, easy work. It felt like he was taking some frustration out from his UFC days on poor Big Show. Like, damn you, Cain Velasquez, and just beat the shit out of him. But
take that, Alistair!
Yeah. So a good performance from Lesnar.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar is so good in this role, and nobody does more with less. And he goes in there, he could care whether or not he wins or loses, but the shame is that WWE has booked him to lose. I think if the end game was him to face The Undertaker, this alone is going to make him look like a challenge to The Undertaker. Imagine if he would have just gone, he's wrestled, 5 matches since he's been back? Imagine if he just goes 5-0 in those matches. And then this happens where he beats the Big Show in 2 minutes and bludgeons him with a steel chair. Then the discussion becomes, well, wow, Big Show or Brock Lesnar may beat The Undertaker. He could be the one. But the way we look at it, I don't care how strong Brock Lesnar looks. I'm looking at this like, well, Triple H beat him last year. What makes me think The Undertaker won't? And we've seen Brock Lesnar lose on these stages before. So, again, Brock Lesnar, brilliant in the role that he was given, but I just don't think in terms of believability as somebody who can beat The Undertaker, I don't think it's going to accomplish that goal when push comes to shove. We go into the WWE World Heavyweight Championship between Randy Orton and John Cena. Before the match, Randy Orton cuts a promo, which actually for Randy Orton, not that he's bad at promos, but he could be a little dry. He's never too creative. He was pretty funny in this spot, called Bray Wyatt a Duck Dynasty reject, which got a very good pop out of the crowd. And going into this, he pretty much called out the whole locker room, said everybody's lining up to face Randy Orton, but they're good, he's great, and he's going to prove it tonight. So Orton and John Cena. I don't really need to go through the blow-by-blow. We've seen this match so many times. It really wasn't that much different than what they usually do, other than the finishes. There was finish after finish. It reminded me of The Rock and John Cena, to where people had seen it before, so they really were grasping at straws as to what they could do, and just ended up countering each other's finish for the whole match. And at one point, John Cena hit the RKO. Randy Orton hit the attitude adjustment. And John Cena slapped on the STF, looked like Randy Orton was just getting ready to tap out, and in comes Bray Wyatt and the Wyatts. They surround the ring. John Cena releases a hold, goes after Bray Wyatt, turns around, runs into an RKO, and Randy Orton wins. The story of this match was not only Bray Wyatt coming in to distract John Cena and tease what has been rumored as a WrestleMania program in April, but the crowd took over this match, chanting, "This is awful," chanting for Daniel Bryan, chanting, "We want divas." They had no interest in seeing John Cena and Randy Orton once again. And we will get into this more after we talk about the Royal Rumble, but WWE is running into a very dangerous situation if the WrestleMania main event is what I think it's going to be and what it's projected to be. So, Randy Orton over John Cena, that do anything for you, Nate?
Not really. I mean, last week, Marcus and I talked about Manning versus Brady, and that was that, what, their 15th meeting?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This seemed like the 50th meeting between Orton and Cena over the years. And, I mean, it's never a bad match, but it's just nothing new. I think one of my favorite chants from the Pittsburgh crowd during the match was, "We want Sting." Like, that got the biggest reaction out of me during that match until the very end. You know, it's like, "We want Sting." I'm like, yeah, Sting would really liven this match up right now, even at 55. But the Wyatt thing at the end was cool. You know, I like I said, if other than Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns, who we'll talk about later, probably the biggest guy to increase his stock coming out of this show was Bray Wyatt. And just having him in there with those guys, and, you know, I look forward. I never thought I'd say it, but I actually look forward to a Cena Wyatt program if that's where they go. In terms of Orton winning the belt, retaining the belt, once he did that, I pretty much knew who was going to win the Rumble. So that kind of took away some of the shine from that match. But, you know, it is what it is. Randy Orton is – he's not – like I said, there's nothing terrible about him. He's just so bland. You know, he's tofu.
This match sucked, man. And the real
– tell him why you mad, son.
The real litmus test to telling if a match is entertaining, if you people who don't watch the product in the room with you and they're starting to realize that, you know, this match is just stupid. Like, once they started hitting the maneuvers or the finishes on each other, I just was waiting for the finish. But I will say I was surprised at the whole Wyatt thing. I didn't see that coming. Especially so soon after their match with Bryan. So it's going to be weird not having Cena in a main event program for WrestleMania 30. It looks like they're going that direction, having him paired up with Bray Wyatt. So that's going to be weird. But I think they need to call an audible on Randy Orton, and they need to do it next month, because this is going to be bad news. If people thought the fans were not interested in this match at the Rumble, I think the fans will turn on Batista Orton at Mania. And I'm not sure that's what the WWE wants to have on, you know, their biggest pay-per-view of the year. So hopefully they decide to change up things and get Orton to drop the title, because it's not doing well. This isn't fun. This isn't entertaining. This is pretty blasé.
The thing about Randy Orton and John Cena, yes, it's a rivalry. And we could have watched Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock go toe-to-toe I don't know how many times, and it would have never gotten old. The thing about John Cena and Randy Orton is they represent an era in wrestling where wrestling is – the product is watered down. People are getting more wrestling than they care. And to have this match still headlining a pay-per-view, I think is borderline unacceptable. I say borderline because it's not my product, and Vince books it, and they can do whatever they want. But you see how the crowd reacts to a program like this. And like Marcus was saying, this is just a preview of what's going to continue to happen if WWE continues to book these programs that are clearly not connecting with fans and are clearly not what we want to see as people who are observing and paying for their product. But, I mean, they've got plenty of time to turn the ship around, so we'll wait and see. The Royal Rumble main event was next. Obviously, it was an hour long, so I can't go by the blow-by-blow. But the notable points in the Royal Rumble, CM Punk, of course, in at one. Kane Kane was in at number five, and this was corporate Kane, who came in really just still in a shirt, not a tie, took off his shirt and was wearing like slacks. So he's working Royal Rumble looking like Isaac Yankem DDS.
He looked like he was from pale.
Yeah, he was long overdue for a tan. Didn't last very long before CM Punk eliminated him. Alexander Rusev, who, if you've watched NXT, this guy is a really, really budding star as a monster heel. Reminds me a lot of Umaga, how he works, that very athletic big man. He came in at number six, had a very good showing. Kofi Kingston was in at number eight.
Quick question about Rusev. Was it
Rusev?
Rusev. All right, so Marcus, did you know who this guy was before he came out?
Yes.
Okay, see, because when I heard, like, I watch NXT very sparingly, but when I heard the music, I was like, did they bring Kozlov back? Because I heard like a little Russian thing at the beginning. So I'm like, yes. Did they actually pay money for Vladimir Kozlov? But then, like you said, they gave that kid a lot of shine. So hopefully he can stick around longer than Bo Dallas did when he came up.
Yeah, they did. He looked very good. He had most of the offense when he was in there, and it took about four or five superstars to eliminate him. So he really looked strong going into there. The concern about debuting guys at the Royal Rumble or bringing somebody back is always that they come back, they're eliminated, and they go away, and you know, it didn't do anything for him. But I think he looked strong because it took so many guys to eliminate him, and he got to showcase some great offense. Kofi Kingston, as I was saying, everybody's wondering what kind of spot he's going to have. Well, when he almost got eliminated, Alexander Rusev caught Kofi Kingston, threw him on the barricade, okay? Kofi Kingston stands up on the barricade away from the front of the ring, and he walks on to the top of it, takes about a couple of steps, and he jumps from the barricade on to the ring apron. I seriously didn't think he was going to pull it off.
Let me ask you a question. How much would I have to pay you in that spot to push Kofi off the barrier?
I was saying the same thing.
I was like, push him off. Come on, push him. What are you going to do, throw you out? Okay, whatever. You messed up the Rumble.
Okay, don't mess with you for throw you out. That would have been hilarious. Then you get Goldust coming
out. That'd be awesome. Like, would you get credited as a fan with an elimination?
You should.
They just cut the camera out and, you know, do a time delay and then have them get back into the Rumble.
Oh. This is why I can't sit in the front row.
Number 12 was Dolph Ziggler making his return, receiving a Let's Go Ziggler chant. He didn't stay very long. Roman Reigns, who had a great showing. Kevin Nash at number 14.
Kevin Nash, let that sink in, people.
Yes. And we had heard stories that Kevin Nash had checked into a WWE hotel and dyed his hair black. So if you fill in the blanks, you know, Kevin Nash, once again, got a nice little pop. Didn't stay for too long. It was funny when he was eliminated that he had to really hold on to the ropes and make sure he landed safe in terracotta or anything like that.
Like, they actually, like, the part that made me shake my head, like, not only did the guys in the ring, like, especially the Shield, like, they're selling Kevin Nash coming down to the ring with their faces, but JBL's like, this is the guy you got to get out early, because if not, he could win the whole thing.
Oh, God, JBL.
Like, I didn't like this at all. I loved it the first time he came back, but tonight, I don't know what condition he's in, but I would love to see Scott Hall sort of complete that comeback, sort of like Jake the Snake did, and him be in that spot as opposed to Kevin Nash, but
yeah,
that's just me.
If you didn't like Kevin Nash being in the Royal Rumble, what do you think of number 16, Great Khali?
Well, at least he's on the roster. That's okay. He's had to, you know, make that money, Khali, but.
Yeah, I had less of a problem with Khali than who was going to show up a couple of entrants later.
What, at 17? Okay. At 17? Or 20?
We'll get into that.
Get into it.
Okay, so Great Khali gets in, he gets out. He's not in for very long, thank God. So now you got the Shield 3-on-1 against CM Punk. They're beating him down. And I, at this point, because I've been saying this for months, I am clamoring for the Ultimate Warrior to come out here and absolutely tear the house down. So I'm saying this is the Ultimate Warrior. This is the spot where they bring the Ultimate Warrior back. Number 17, it's the Warrior. The Celtic Warrior in Sheamus as he makes his return. Gets polite applause and has a pretty strong showing at the Royal Rumble. Actually made it all the way to the final three. And number 18, The Miz, whatever. Fandango comes in. Everybody Fandangos. It's a very polite.
All this guy is an entrance now. Like, that's it. He's an entrance.
He is, but it's one of those things where they can bring him back like 15, 20 years from now, and he'll be like the Godfather, you know? When you have an entrance in WWE, you're there forever. It's New Age Outlaws, the Godfather. If you want to, you know, if you want a steady paycheck for a while. Number 20 is what we were talking about. And
yes.
Fans were very mad, and we'll get into why the fans were mad later. But, you know, one person was not in the Royal Rumble who a lot of people thought should have been in. A lot of people were in the Royal Rumble who a lot of people know shouldn't have been in. One of these people was number 20, El Torito.
Yes.
Neither of Los Matadores. They come in, and the announcers are wondering which one of the Los Matadores is going to be the Royal Rumble. But if you looked at the screen, it said El Torito. And this little person bull came into the Royal Rumble. He was showcased, did a couple of Hurricane Ratas, eliminated Fandango, got into it with CM Punk for a little bit. And, Brother Nate, what did you think about El Torito being?
Like, I was like, come on. Like, I know Hornswoggle's been in it before. Mm-hmm. So I know they do, like, the spots for the kids and everything, but it's like, you got guys that are legitimately, like, CM Punk sold for El Torito, man. Stop it.
Well, this doesn't bother me. This doesn't bother you as much as number 24 does, though. JBL.
Well, number 21 was Antonio Cesaro, who comes in and gets to do the Cesaro swing to a couple of guys and really gets a big reaction. He did it to Seth Rollins for, I mean, I don't know how long.
And
it
made almost me dizzy. 30
seconds. Yeah, I did this kind of, well, that's because he did this great camera angle to where every time he did a revolution, the camera would zoom in and out to kind of create that effect. I really liked how they did that. And Cesaro, you always can tell who WWE likes in these Royal Rumbles with how strong they make him look. Because Damian Sandow was in there. A lot of people thought he was a sleeper to go very far. He was in there for a cup of coffee, so I don't know what's going on for him. Dolph Ziggler wasn't in there for very long, but Cesaro has steadily had momentum and was in there for a while and was showcased. So you know that he is somebody that the office is high on. Number 24, as Marcus was inferring to, is JBL. Now, here's what's funny about JBL is they go to the entrance. Obviously, he's at the announce table. He gets out, gets in the ring. He takes his jacket out, gets a huge reaction. And you can hear him say, Michael, hold my jacket. He gives his jacket away to Michael Cole. He gets eliminated by Roman Reigns in seconds. It just goes right back to the announce table. And as they're trying to bring it up, he just keeps changing the subject like, the Great Royal Rumble is in. JBL is one of the best television characters on that show. I love it. And the best part of this is after he got eliminated, the crowd is chanting, you still got it.
Yeah. That's it. I actually laughed at that spot. I wish he would have at least got one clothesline from hell.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a problem with that as much as El Torito.
Yeah. This reminds me of Jerry Lawler, and I think it was 1997 when he came in off of the announce table and just got punched and went over the top rope by Bret Hart. Ryback was number 26, the big guy. He was eliminated by the man who walked in at number 28, which is Batista.
Like, remember when Ryback was important?
Yes, man. He eliminated five people last year.
He was the final two.
Yeah, he got eliminated by Cena. He looked like, even the night after WrestleMania, it looked like they were going to push, get behind him, and he just turned heel, and it just hasn't been the same since for Ryback, so he wasn't in it for very long. Biggie Langston at number 29. Now, here's the thing about the Royal Rumble, is that as the entries were creeping dangerously close to number 30, fans were chanting, yes, they were chanting for Daniel Bryan. It was almost like desperation, like, where is Daniel Bryan, okay? And they're chanting for Daniel Bryan with one entry to go. And if you saw the pre-Royal Rumble package, you saw the people who were advertised, and one of them still hadn't made their entrance. Yeah. So for these fans chanting for Daniel Bryan, if they had done the logistics, they would know that number 30 was Rey Mysterio. And Rey Mysterio became the biggest heel in Pennsylvania. They booed this man unmercifully. And mind you, this is a guy who has not turned heel once since joining the WWE years and years and years ago. Booed him unmercifully. When he was eventually eliminated by Seth Rollins, they cheered. So they were not very happy. And for the rest of this match, the fans completely took over the Royal Rumble, chanting for Daniel Bryan. They were chanting no. At one point, Sheamus set up for the brogue kick, and he was beating his chest. You know, they usually say brogue, but they were chanting no, no, no every time he's beating his chest. It gets down to the final three, Roman Reigns, Sheamus, and Batista. Roman Reigns eliminates Sheamus, making him the man with the most Royal Rumble eliminations in history. That was his 12th elimination, beating Kane's record that stood for 13 years at 11. So it's down to Roman Reigns and Batista. Fans continue to crucify this. At one point, they got behind Roman Reigns, but I think really because they knew Batista was going to win, and they were just kind of being defiant and chanting against the result. Very short showdown. Batista wins the Royal Rumble by eliminating Roman Reigns, and these fans just could not boo enough. The fireworks at the WrestleMania sign were barely enough to drown out the boos, and when they were done, the fans continued to boo this match. So Batista is your Royal Rumble winner. Daniel Bryan will be the story of this Royal Rumble and where they go with him and whether or not this is the right choice. Marcus, we'll start with you. What did you think about the Royal Rumble?
I thought overall it sort of lacked the surprise star power. Kevin Nash wasn't doing it for me. Wasn't enough.
El Torito didn't do it for you?
No, didn't do it for me. Though it had a huge pop from my Hispanic coworker. He loved it. He was like, oh, Lucha Libre. I said, yeah. El Torito! Yeah, he thought it was entertaining.
Oh, yeah, speaking of people that fell off, like, Alberto Del Rio was in this match for, like, 2 seconds. Like, what happened with him?
That's the thing. He was the one teased as the big opponent of Batista, and you knew there would be a showdown between them, but Batista just essentially threw him out. There was no competition there.
Yeah, twice now. They've sort of buried Del Rio to Batista, so it might be over. It might be moving on.
We got a Latin superstar. His name is El Torito.
Yeah. But overall, yeah. I thought it was just it was an okay Rumble. I understand why the fans are upset. You know, nobody was really expecting Bryan to win, so the fact that he wasn't in the Rumble didn't bother me. I think what really screwed the WWE was having the first match feature Bryan and for Bryan to lose, and I think people just used their imaginations as to, okay, well, he lost, so he must have this redemption story later in the night. No, that wasn't the plan. So I think that's where they shot themselves in the foot and booking that match so early in the night. But overall, it was a whatever Rumble. I'm glad Reigns got his push, and hopefully this leads to a future title shot sometime this year.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good Rumble. You know, I like you, Alfred, I wish the man from Parts Unknown would have came out, because that would have been the biggest pop of the night for me. But, you know, just some quick things that we got the Kofi spots. You know, not only did we get the one with him jumping from the guardrail to the ring, but he did the deal where Swagger was about to kick him out, and he held on to the ropes with his feet and then came back in. And I was like, this guy worked so hard for something that doesn't matter. Like, every year, this dude comes up with some creative stuff, and it's like, yeah, you're like a mixtape MC. You ain't never going to get a Grammy. So thanks for playing. But in terms of Roman Reigns, I really liked how they booked him. I'm not sure if he's going to get this type of reaction in every city they go to, but for tonight, he looked like a star. And I thought, you know, I had a feeling Bautista was going to win, but for a second, I was like, could they actually pull the trigger with this kid? And, of course, they didn't. But I think the fact that that thought came into my mind shows that they did a good job of making Roman Reigns look strong. So I think coming out of the Rumble, the biggest storylines to me are, what do they do with Daniel Bryan? What's going on with Cena and Wyatt? And then the Shield. You know, how does that breakup occur? And if you notice, like, I didn't say anything about Orton and Batista, because to me, that's not an interesting storyline. And I think the fans in Pittsburgh, you know, showed you that tonight.
Yeah, I take a pretty diplomatic approach toward the whole Daniel Bryan controversy. And on one hand, yes, the fans are chanting, and you hear these live arenas chanting for Daniel Bryan, and he's the hottest superstar in WWE right now. That doesn't always necessarily translate to there being money in him, because I remember when CM Punk, it didn't get hotter than him in the summer of 2011. And if you look at the ratings after that pipe bomb promo, they weren't only bad. They were historically bad. I'm talking in the 2.9 range. And this is a two-hour era of Raw where kind of ratings like that are unheard of. So it doesn't always mean that a superstar like this, who's very popular with the fans at the moment, especially smaller guys, doesn't always mean that they're going to translate to money. Having said that, WWE is running into a very, very cosmetic problem in that they're going into their WrestleMania 30 pay-per-view. This isn't just any other WrestleMania. This is a milestone. This should be the biggest WrestleMania they've done of all time. Do you really want the lasting image to be fans chanting for Daniel Bryan? Because that, to me, is going to happen, and whether they like it or not, they might as well have Daniel Bryan in the ring to hear it, because they are, the way things are going right now, they're not going to be embracing Batista versus Randy Orton. They're probably going to still want Daniel Bryan in the main event. And you run into a problem, because I just don't think The Office sees Daniel Bryan as that top flight guy.
And kind of on that point, real quick, Mick Foley on Twitter tonight. Mick Foley and his son, they were going ham. Foley, at the end of the Rumble, he was like, wait, at WWE, Daniel Bryan isn't even in the Royal Rumble. That just kind of sucks. Does the WWE actually hate their own audience? I've never been so disgusted with a pay-per-view, and those tweets have, at this moment, have over 16,000 retweets. So, you know, it's not like, granted, you know, it's in terms of their entire audience, Marcus, it's a small percentage, but it's still a pretty significant vocal minority.
It is, but all right, here's my mea culpa that the WWE can do to please the 10% crowd. Elimination Chamber, Orton drops the title to Brock Lesnar in the chamber. Because remember, Orton, Batista came back, not Batista, Lesnar came back and said his goal was to win the title. So right. Have Orton drop the title to Lesnar, and you put Bryan in the match with Taker, which would please everyone.
And then you go Lesnar Batista at the Mania.
You go Lesnar Batista for the title at Mania. Fuck Orton at this point. I don't care what he, I don't care what he does.
Orton and El Torito.
Yeah, I mean you can even toss Orton in that three way match if you want to for the title, but Orton should be in the back burner at this point. And you made Bryan Taker. It, you know, if looking at the wrestlers on the roster who Taker would not only want to work with, but in terms of getting a good match out of, Bryan's at the top of the list. You would get that reaction that you would want at the end of the show. And, I mean, if you're really feeling in bunches and really wanted to push Bryan, have Bryan be Taker and just, you know, really get on the Daniel Bryan train and do it from there. But, yeah, it'll never happen, I don't think, but it's a solution to please the minority fans who are upset about this whole booking situation.
I don't think Batista and Brock Lesnar would please fans in a main event spot like that. And I just don't, at this point with The Undertaker, you need either a monster heel, or not even a monster, like a massive heel. It doesn't have to be a monster heel, but a massive heel or somebody with a legacy. And I think Brock Lesnar would fall into that standpoint. Now, having Brock Lesnar win the title Elimination Chamber is interesting in that, if Daniel Bryan were the number one contender, and I know it's too late to do this, but how compelling of a storyline would Daniel Bryan against Brock Lesnar be?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got the ultimate David versus Goliath story with how big and how bad Brock Lesnar is, how Daniel Bryan is the smaller guy, and you look at the way these two work. They work very realistic mixed martial arts submission styles. They could have a great match together with Daniel Bryan as the lead, and you're not running into this situation where you're depending on Daniel Bryan to draw the house in WrestleMania. You got Brock Lesnar there in the main event, and you can still make Daniel Bryan, but obviously it's maybe too late to do something like
speaking
that.
Speaking of Bryan, did you see his tweets from after the pay-per-view? Or actually during
I did
the
with
pay-per-view.
The Yes Movement.
Yeah, he said, sorry guys, the Machine wanted me nowhere near the Royal Rumble match, but I thank everyone for the support. You are the Yes Movement. They try to keep us down and away from the top spots, but they can't ignore the reactions forever. Keep voicing your opinions. So, pretty vocal for Daniel Bryan to pretty much go after creative for not having him in the match.
He did the interview. What was it?
Yes,
week?
I was about to bring that with WGRD, I believe, in Michigan State, or Grand Rapids, Michigan. And, like, he was – Daniel Bryan, if you've seen him in interviews and whatnot, he's a very easygoing guy. And he even said that in the interview, that that is one of his faults. But he's never sounded more frustrated and disgruntled than he did in this interview, in where he was basically saying, what do I need to do in order to get to the top, in order for you to give me a chance as a face? He was talking about the politics and all that stuff.
Let me ask you, though, as the wrestling cynic, do you think that's his – he's speaking from the heart, or do you think that's the work? Because that – if you look at it, that's actually what – the fans think of him, that's actually the character, you know, with the administration holding him down. You know, that's part of the storyline. So do you feel these comments and these tweets are really, you know, Bryan Danielson speaking from the heart? Or is it a work, or is it somewhere in between?
I think it's art imitating life and life imitating art. I'll tell you why I think it was more realistic for Daniel Bryan to be as disgruntled as he was on the Grand Rapids interview is because he's bringing up behind-the-scenes stuff like the Michigan State chance and how that had influence on WWE turning him, how he said that, well, nobody told me about how I was going to turn back into a good guy. He was peeling the curtain back and talking a lot of real life creative type standpoints from the WWE. And so that's why I think that that may have been a little more realistic.
There's a good post in WrestleZone with a collection of tweets from various wrestlers sort of voicing their displeasure at what happened with Daniel Bryan, ranging from Gregory Helm saying, sadly, WWE is still run by muscle marks. It is what it is, folks. Tommy Dreamer, how much would have the building and Twitter exploded?
Did he say hashtag, what's up with that?
No, he did not. Tommy Dreamer, who said, how much would have the building and Twitter exploded if Rey Mysterio took off his mask and it was Daniel Bryan? Man, that'd be so good. Damn it.
Dreamer's the front guy these days.
Hire this man for booking.
Right, booking.
Tommaso Ciampa, biggest disappointment in Royal Rumble history, possibly in WWE history. Bryan is so over that everyone else is now a heel by result. So people are starting to notice that what they're doing with this guy is it's kind of fucked up.
and the thing is, like Albert said, like the way that, you know, things are kind of lining up for Mania as we get on that road to WrestleMania, there's not really, unless you, you know, call that audible, unless you make, you know, a bold decision, there's not really a place for him to fit in to be one of those marquee guys.
No, as it stands right now, according to PW Insider, the top five matches has been set. And if you watch the Royal Rumble play out, it is in accordance with what they said. One of the matches is going to be Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. And that program obviously hasn't started yet, but Bray Wyatt and John Cena was set to be a top match. And you saw that play out at the Royal Rumble. Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker, I can only imagine the only reason he's being kept this strong is so that he can be as threatening as possible to The Undertaker's record. And then Batista and Randy Orton. If you watch the Royal Rumble, Batista won. Randy Orton is the champion. So it looks like all that's set. We're going to get Daniel Bryan and Sheamus.
Yeah, I pray to God that they don't put that match first on the card, because if they do, those next 3 hours and 45 minutes are going to be living hell for them. I mean, the only way they can do that is to have that match lead into Undertaker and whoever as the main event. Because if you put any match besides Taker after Daniel Bryan with that crowd in that Superdome environment, I think they're going to really shoot themselves in the foot. By the way, so my neighbor just yelled at Madonna coming out at the Grammys. Get a life.
The same
woman who called her son a nigger on Instagram. We forgot about that story.
That would have been another addition. Not only that, but also Wendy Williams' reaction to that story.
Yeah.
I wish my son would call me a nigger.
She said that?
She got mad because, like, she was telling the story, and then she got emotional because she's like, but at least he still loves me. He has a connection with his mother. My son doesn't have a connection with me anymore. They're like, lady.
He's like, her son's like 12. What's going on in this household, the Williams household?
Girl.
How you doing?
I don't want to talk to you, Mom. getting back to heading towards WrestleMania, I guess a couple questions. So are we all kind of in agreement that it's going to be Batista and Orton, and they're not going to hotshot anything or call any audibles?
You never know. They always change their minds.
So I think they call an audible.
You think they do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's not a good look when your title match is just... I mean, this would happen the night after Mania last year with that Orton match that just turned into a shit show of the fans doing what they wanted. So I think they hotshot it for fear that the fans would do the same at Mania if Orton
involved. That's a possibility, but you also know that they can be stubborn.
Yeah, but I think they know that Batista's not going to generate the reaction that they need to counter whatever Randy Orton will bring to the ring in terms of the fan base. So I think they might have to do something.
And why not just flip-flop Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan? You could have Daniel Bryan win at the Elimination Chamber and take on Batista, who at this point, okay, fans are already starting to boo him. If you look at him on Twitter, he is the biggest troll, and he's always fighting with fans.
That outfit.
And he's so good.
Yeah, wearing them skinny jeans.
So good as a heel. Yeah, he did not like people crucifying him for that. But he's so good as a heel. If you remember when he last was in WWE, his final run as a heel was brilliant. So he could keep wearing those skinny jeans and embrace that kind of douchebag character that he portrays. So, you know, you got Batista in the main event. Okay, whatever. If you have Batista and Randy Orton in the main event, which is something people have seen over and over again and something that they're not interested in seeing again, I guarantee you that the story of that main event will be what the fans do in reaction to it. And that's really not the story you want coming out of WrestleMania 30.
By the way, you mentioned Batista. I texted my girlfriend and I said, Batista won the Royal Rumble The Giants are tight pants. She writes back, wow, already on top. I'm rubbing off on her, guys. She's got the lingo down. She's got the lingo down.
All cynical. I like it.
Yeah. Already on top.
He can't draw money.
Is he even over?
But yeah, I actually would like to see your idea, Alfred, with Batista and Bryan. I think that'd be a very compelling Mania match. But just in the back of my head, I have a feeling that they're going to be stubborn and say, no, you know, we know what's best for business, you know, and that's Batista and Orton.
Yeah, and I mean, they've been stubborn with Daniel Bryan. How many times have we seen, we saw that championship ascension ceremony where Daniel Bryan was on the outside looking in, the fans are chanting for him, and they just blew by it. You saw Survivor Series, there's a big show on Randy Orton, fans chanting for Daniel Bryan. You saw it again at the Royal Rumble, and it's just like WWE continues to just say, listen, we know what's best. And you know what? To their credit, they do. They do. I do trust WWE more than the fans. But at the same time, the fans are the ones who made Stone Cold Steve Austin, who WWE was intent on making this maniacal heel. And they said, no, he has to be a heel. He beats up his boss. He drinks beers on the job. Nobody likes a guy like that. But I mean, they loved him.
Yeah, so we'll see on that. My second question, though, guys, is we saw what they did with Roman Reigns tonight. Do you think this reaction accelerates the breakup and the dissolution of the Shield? And if so, do we get Reigns versus Rollins and Ambrose at Mania?
Oh, I hope not. That would bury Rollins and Ambrose. Because you figure Reigns is going to win that match, and 2-on-1, it seems like, all right, well, these two guys aren't shit if one guy can beat them. So, yeah. What did we have a couple years ago? Remember when
Orton was a legacy?
Yeah, when they broke up. It was 1-on-1-on-1. Or was it 2-on-1?
It was a triple threat match.
It was a triple threat match. I didn't see a triple threat match, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
I wouldn't want to see a handicap match. No, that would be bad for
especially with the way they've been playing Rollins as kind of Switzerland in between the two guys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because really, if you think about it, going moving forward to a Raw this next week, Rollins has as much beef, you know, with Reigns as Reigns did with Ambrose. You see what I'm saying? Because Reigns was pissed at Ambrose for trying to eliminate him, but then Reigns comes over and eliminates Rollins, who was trying to make peace, and be like, hey, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a really, really good, like, there's shades of, there's honor among thieves, no honor among thieves, if you will.
Yeah, and they cut a promo at the Royal Rumble pay-per-view where they started kind of, it was Ambrose and Rollins went back and forth, and Ambrose and Reigns went back and forth, and Rollins had to break it up. And then as a Royal Rumble match, Roman Reigns eliminated Rollins and Ambrose and Cesaro at the same time after Ambrose had tried to eliminate Rollins. So they're clearly going with a breakup storyline, and I do think it's going to lead to a triple threat match.
Well, what do you do about the title then? I think he would have to – I think they wanted to do unification at one point, right, with Ambrose and Big E? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've got time to not only unify those titles, but then – make that triple threat match for the unified title.
And maybe that, you know, Reigns plays into Ambrose losing, because I think the other thing I noticed from not only tonight, but the last couple of weeks is Big E Langston's kind of cooled off a bit.
Yeah. And he was kind of the forgotten man here in the Royal Rumble. And I expected him to really be one of those guys who threatened that elimination record. Yeah. And he was going on kind of an upward progression towards the Royal Rumble, but the last couple of weeks wasn't really seen or heard from much. And then when he came in, it was just, he was in and then he was out.
Yeah. So that unification match, if it takes place, that could, you know, kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. We could do something at the chamber to where, yeah, I agree. Somebody from the Shield costs Ambrose the match. And that really accelerates the breakup storyline to where, cause that match, I don't think needs a title.
And no, but I think
Roman Reigns would be
them,
the guy. Yeah, exactly. I think Roman Reigns would be the guy that if he won that match, because usually at WrestleMania, the unwritten rule is like the big heel who wins is the next in line for like a WWE title shot. I know Roman Reigns would probably gear towards a babyface turn, but if he wins that triple threat match alone, then he could just vault into the WWE title picture.
Yeah. And so my final question then, which is what everyone around the world and the people in Pittsburgh, they voiced it very loudly, very vociferously during the Orton and Cena match. Will we see a man called Sting at Mania or the night after on Raw?
Alfred, you go first.
I think it would be a waste if it was the night after. And with the Undertaker already tied up, I really don't see what you do with Sting outside of having him induct the Warrior, and I think that would be a waste too. So, I mean, it's WrestleMania 30, so they're going to have extra incentive to do so. You know what? I'm going to say yes. Screw it. I'm going to say it's now or never. It's yes.
So you're saying Sting shows up at WrestleMania?
Yes.
And what match? Taker?
I don't think it's a God.
Is that Does he have match?
The match? A match? It's tough. I don't know who he faces. I just think they'll be desperate to sign him. You know what? They've been looking for work from the Ultimate Warrior, and the rumor is Warrior Ryback. Maybe he works Warrior at WrestleMania. You know what? Now that I'm kind of thinking this through, I'm going to change my answer and say no. He's not because WrestleMania is in California next year. WrestleMania is in California next year. Sting's just a hop, skip, and a jump away in Venice Beach. Or at least that's where he's billed from. So, you know, maybe they wait till next year. So, no, not at this year. It's WrestleMania.
I think they save him for the night after Mania. It doesn't make sense. I mean, when's the last time you've seen a major superstar come back? Or a major superstar debut or arrive at Mania? See, it's usually the night after they try to save that stuff for television.
Yeah.
Especially with this new network coming out, I'm sure they'll want to push. I mean, I'm still banking on Hogan to make his debut the night the network launches in February. So that's what I'm still saying and sticking to. So I think Sting will make an appearance at the Raw after Mania. It's already the hottest Raw of the year. So I'm sure that they'll need something to sort of keep the bar there, and he'll come out and do something.
I was gonna say, do you think we actually get it? Interaction, the face to face with the two of them, and Sting's like, you know, I'll see you next year.
Was Taker on Raw last year? Then added after.
I think yeah, they did something with him and the Shield, didn't they?
Or I believe. I can't remember. That was a long show.
They could just tease the Undertaker's retirement the whole show, and then when he's about to retire, Sting comes out and they do a face to face.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But, I mean, I don't think you even need to even hint at Taker. I think you can just do something in the rafters and just get people buzzing about what could be. So, but I think the night after Mania, it doesn't make sense for him to show up at Mania just unannounced or without any background or backstory.
What I'm thinking is I'm kind of splitting the difference. What I would do if I were in charge, I would have, you know, Taker go over Brock at Mania, have him do his pose, and then, you know, just cut to a quick shot of Sting in the rafters. Like, just, that's all he does. You don't hear him talk. It's not even really a close-up shot. It's like, if you blink, you miss. You're like, what, was that Sting? Then the next night, you have Taker come out and, you know, do whatever he's going to say whatever he's going to say, and then Sting shows up and he's like, you know, I like Alfred's idea of Taker teasing the retirement and Sting saying, hey, big man, you got one challenge left. If you're up for it next year, I'll see you at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And then that's where we leave it. And then, you know, Sting's gone for a while. Taker's gone for a while. We start the vignettes. Once the network launches, you know, they integrate more of the WCW footage in and educate the audience about who Sting is. And then maybe around Royal Rumble time next year, because Sting, I would suspect he'd probably have to get one match in maybe before Taker, and maybe you do a Sting Kane match or something like that where Sting goes over and looks strong.
There you go.
And then you do Sting and Taker at Mania.
Well, the only retirement thing, I mean, you have to make sure he wants to actually retire, because otherwise you're doing this angle about retirement, and then the following year he's on a, you know, possibly wrestling in Dallas, so. That's the only thing with the retirement angle is this has to be his final match, and I don't think it'll be his final match. I think eventually he's going to have to lose his stupid streak, and
yeah,
it has to be someone like a Cena or someone they're trying to put over. So that's the only thing about the retirement.
You think he's eventually going to drop this? He's going to lose this match at WrestleMania, The Undertaker?
I think so.
Wow. I think
he'll want to. He seems like one of the true guys that would, you know, want to really put over the next guy. And what's the better way to do that than snapping the streak?
Yeah, The Undertaker is an old school guy who respects the unwritten rules and the code of backstage in that sense. And I too think that he would be in favor of that. But I don't think the WWE would overrule him.
Because
the streak is so much more important than any title they have, and it's such a marketing tool that they could keep going back to. That I think if they were to end that streak, they would run into a situation because The Undertaker works what, once a year, mm-hmm. so they can preserve him for maybe the next 5-6 years. And if they ended the streak and then decided, wow, we want The Undertaker to appear at WrestleMania, it would mean nothing.
Like appear as in like wrestler, or appear as in just like
appear as a wrestler. Like, I mean, I'm just saying if they end it within the next 2-3 years, I really could see The Undertaker going for another 6 years if they just use him once a year.
I don't know. I feel like there will be eventually someone who will come around who will need that push, that rub. And what better? I mean, could you imagine, like, if we mentioned Brian, what if Brian beat Taker and snapped the streak? Like, what do you think the reaction would be from the smart marks on that?
Yeah, but they don't make up. The arena would explode, I think. Mm-hmm. I think people would be excited. But then at the same time, there'd be a lot of people who would be disgruntled. Here's the thing about The Undertaker losing at WrestleMania. If you do it at the main event, people go home and they're depressed. They're just like, God, Undertaker lost at WrestleMania. And your fans will not generally go home happy. If you do it like before the main event, in the middle of the show, you've killed the crowd. And all people can really think about is, God, Undertaker lost tonight. So that's why I think that you just got to be careful with The Undertaker losing.
It's got to be somebody that, it can't be the monster heel. It's got to be, if you remember the feud he had with Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
Somebody that was a hot baby face, but they had a disadvantage, which is why I think the Bryan thing could work. So it would either have to be somebody like Bryan, who I don't think the corporate side of things would get behind. I think they'd much more rather have him drop the streak to somebody like Roman Reigns. Because I think that's more than anybody on the roster. I think that's their guy. I think he surpassed Bryan. He surpassed Punk. He surpassed Big E. He's the guy that, you know, they want to get behind. And I think eventually, you know, sooner rather than later, he's going to be, you know, one of the top guys.
I mean, one can only hope. But, like, I'm not holding my breath for that because, again, Ryback was in the same position last year where I was convinced that he was going to be John Cena's heir apparent. And you look at him a year later. So you never know with WWE. They just get cold feet.
Ryback,
the big guy.
Man. Yeah,
him and Warrior. Can you imagine that?
We should have a three-way dance: Ryback, the Warrior, and Goldberg. 5-star instant classic.
Oh man, how many quads would be torn in that match?
Oh, Kevin Nash can be the referee since he's in fine working condition.
Yeah, he was in good shape. He looked in good shape.
He did look good.
That dye job, though, was shit. Whatever movie he's working on, he needs to talk to him about that dye job. But besides that, I mean, he looked more mobile than he did a couple years ago.
Yeah. Well, he also didn't have to do the ladder match they had him do?
Yeah.
Oh, but even his Rumble cameo, he looked wooden.
Yeah. So I would say overall, I would say this is probably, you know, I thought the Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt match was awesome. Mm-hmm. I actually liked the pre-show, the tag team match on the pre-show.
Yes, yeah.
The Rumble, you know, it was what it was. So overall, I'd give the show like a 7, maybe an 8 out of 10.
Marcus, what did you give the show?
I'd give it a Nate Milton 6 out of 10.
I thought the Royal Rumble was very entertaining, actually. I was very entertained watching it, but it just ended on such a sour note. And I think the second half of the show did not live up to what the first half of the show delivered. And I'm including the New Age Outlaws match in that. So I'll give it about a 6 out of 10.
Wow. So I'm the one that's high. So yeah, I'll go with a 7. And so I'm the one that's the highest on the WWE product. That's when does that happen?
That's from all that shitty TNA you watch. That's why you're like, oh my God.
Hey, we got a new investor coming in this week. It's going to be good. It's going to be good times.
And they're going back to Orlando. They have a home now.
There you go. Yeah. And like the shows for the next month will be, in terms of just TV, TNA is going to be pretty good to watch for the next month. The UK crowd's off the chain. Like, even if the booking sucks, like, the crowd is amazing.
Yeah, the spoilers will ruin it. I'll just read the spoilers and be done till March.
Till March. Speaking of UK, I really don't mind the Rockstar Spud character. I think he's pretty entertaining. I think what he's given.
Like, I think if the my only issue with those characters, Spud and Ethan Carter III, is that they're in too many main event angles. But if you just look at them as characters, I think they're fine. They're funny. They're entertaining. They'd be excellent mid card workers, but they're just in a spot that's a little bit over their heads right now.
How obnoxious are the bromans?
Oh yeah.
What happens with Ethan?
I said, wait until you get the Ethan Carter title match headlining the pay-per-view. We're talking about Derek Bateman, a guy who couldn't cut it on NXT, will probably soon, at some point this year, will headline a pay-per-view for TNA.
I'd rather see him headline a pay-per-view than Gunnar. Real time. Like, why does Gunnar have a championship title opportunity?
Because there's only 10 wrestlers left in the company. Someone's got to do it.
Somebody can't call Kenny King. Is he busy stripping this weekend?
Is that Chippendales?
Chippendales, man. He probably gets paid more.
Yeah, I know he gets booked more.
Yeah.
that's his primary job. Oh, Kenny King. So, I guess he's not feeling royal. And then I was going to play the Lord's song.
Yeah.
That was it, but I'm not going to do that much post-production tonight.
Aw.
It's what you get. It's a special episode of the Kings of Sports, so it's not a whole lot of post-production going on. So, before we get out of here, any other wrestling insights or opinions about where we're heading with WrestleMania and you know what the WWE is doing right now, starting with you, Big Nasty?
I just can't wait to Raw and see how WWE, because there is going to be a reaction to the outcry of Daniel Bryan outrage. So I just am very interested in how Raw is going to play out.
I am now more interested in this network launching. 28 days until the network launches, and until then, I'm sort of like, on.
I was gonna say, like, where's your interest level at for WrestleMania right now? Because I'm probably like at a 6 out of 10 in terms of my interest level for WrestleMania.
Well, it's at a 10 because it's in fucking New Orleans. So I mean, it you could have Gunner wrestle EC3 out there, and I wouldn't care. I'd be in New Orleans. So it's gonna take a lot to really sway me from WrestleMania at this point.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the card itself. Like, as a not the weekend, not the atmosphere, but just what you're gonna see from bell to bell.
If it's gonna be Batista, Orton, Punk, Triple H, and Taker and Lesnar, I mean, shit, I think on paper, that's still probably better than last year's card. And I was interested in last year's card going into it, but it was my first Mania, so.
Yeah, and last year's card was, you know, above average at best. And, you know, I saw when I read the leaked matches that were coming out, I just did a lot of head shaking. I'm not really interested in seeing Batista Orton in the main event. And now that there's only one title, the Royal Rumble means so much more and things are more set in stone. Instead of WWE wanting the main event that it can get with two titles and just kind of flexing things around. So after this Royal Rumble, I think my interest level went down because we're that much closer to Batista and Orton. And as much as I like Batista being back, I just don't think this is the right spot for him. So I would say 5 out of 10.
Is it crazy that Bray Wyatt and John Cena might be the most interesting and intriguing matchup?
And I'm not really interested in that match, so I just don't care.
Like, Punk Triple H to me, like, that should be the spot Daniel Bryan's in, you know, in my opinion. Orton and Batista, I'm not interested in at all. I think Brock and Taker will be excellent, especially with Heyman. You know, he can tell the storyline if he didn't get it done with Punk, but he's going to get it done with Brock. But I have no interest in Daniel Bryan and Shane. It's like, that's to me a slap in the face.
Where's that going to come from?
Yeah, that's a slap in the face to the fans. But Bryan and Cena and Wyatt, maybe just for the promos, you know, because that you can't be jokey Cena with Bray Wyatt. Like, Cena will have to be forced to become serious with his promos, and I think that could be an interesting exchange.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird to have for me to care about Cena matches that don't involve the title. I'm so used to him having the title or chasing the title that breaking off into this feud with Bray Wyatt, I'm like, all right, well, okay, either he wins, great, or he loses, great. Like, I just don't, maybe that's, well, you know, that's what Raw will build up to. But at the moment, I could care less about those two.
Yeah, it is a weird spot to see Cena just like pretty much. It's going to be like third from the top, and no title on the line, and with one title in the WWE at WrestleMania 30 for John Cena to be in this spot. It's like, this is your biggest star. And you kind of want to christen that with WrestleMania 30.
And we're talking about a guy who's, I mean, he's produced numbers. If you look at the past WrestleManias, it helped that The Rock was there, but he's generated a million buys multiple years now, so I hope they know what they're doing there.
And we will see whether the road to WrestleMania will be smooth or whether it'll be a bumpy, rocky ride. But this is the season of the year when wrestling gets interesting, and we get a lot of the casual viewers to kind of poke their heads back around, like, oh, WrestleMania's coming back around. So we'll see.
One last thing about Lesnar. If he does somehow get involved in this Elimination Chamber match, this pay-per-view is in his hometown. Well, his unofficial hometown of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I don't know if the fans are like in Minneapolis, but if they wanted to even flip Lesnar into a babyface somehow, that's probably the best place to do it. That way you can flip Batista to what he should be, a heel, and then somehow get Lesnar over as a face.
So yeah, but I mean, they shouldn't do that for just one show. Yeah.
No, going forward.
Oh, going forward?
You think Rock should be a face going forward?
Just because they're in his hometown once. I mean, people are going to cheer Brock Lesnar. There are people cheering him tonight, even though he's a heel. Now they're just going to ignore it, or they'll just call Bizarro World or something.
Well, not so much because they're in his hometown, but if there was a place to do it, that would be the ideal place to do it. I mean, it's going to be a lot harder to do it at Mania or somewhere else like that, but you know, if it's in his backyard and you already have this guy who's dressed like a douchebag, and the fans already seem hesitant to already get behind, which is not his fault that, you know, he wasn't Daniel Bryan, but just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that to a certain extent, but by the same token, I think they need strong heels, because Randy Orton right now is your top heel. Like, you need as many strong heels as you can, and I think Brock with Heyman, like, that's a guy that you can't afford to lose, because you can put him in there with so many different guys, like Brian, Cena. So, Punk, if they choose to go back to that. So I would like to see Brock stay heel, even in his hometown, even with Prince in the rafters cheering for him.
did you guys watch that CM Punk interview, by the way, with Ariel?
I did.
No. What was he talking about?
I didn't have to watch it because it was buffering for me, but I just know it was 30 minutes, and he pretty much covered a lot of stuff from his contract expiring.
Oh, he talked about the Beatle deal?
Hmm?
He talked about the Beatle deal, Alfred?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he talked about that, too.
His side of the story was pretty interesting, because it sounded like, I mean, my guess is that he had like a one night thing with Michelle Beadle and didn't call her back.
Allegedly.
Michelle Beadle, you know, that's, I'm saying my guess. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just saying we don't need to start any trouble with anybody. No. Especially since she's back with the mothership now.
Yeah.
We don't need those problems.
So, you know, he was defending AJ and saying that she was being very disrespectful to him and high-fived their girl after calling him an F-face, a fuck-face. And then AJ had some very calm words with her that were blown out of proportion. So, I mean, we heard a different story, but, you know, the media tends to blow things
up. Look at it this way. She's still the champ, so it couldn't have been that bad, because if it was that bad, they would have made an example out of her.
I'll have to check out that interview, because I definitely want to hear.
It's good.
Anytime you get to hear Punk talk, and Ariel's one of the best, so I'll definitely check that out. But you folks, don't forget to check us out. We'll be back later on in the week with another episode of The Kings of Sport. You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, as well as Facebook.com/ The Kings of Sport. And Place to Be Nation, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And if you go to Place to Be Nation right now, you can check out the very first edition of my TNA Impact Recap, where I covered the second night of Genesis, and so and maybe the last night of Sting in TNA. So you can go to Place to Be and check that out as well as all the other shows on there. So we're going to get out of here now. But before we do, Marcus, where can the people find you, follow your work, and give you their predictions for what's going to happen on the road to WrestleMania?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MarcoWill, MarcoWill.
Big Nasty.
At This Is Nasty, Good Bleach Report. Read the articles. Watch the shows.
You can follow me at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter as well. Follow all of us at Cospod on Twitter, K-O-S underscore P-O-D. And that's going to do it for this week. Fun night. Had to give y'all a special show, man, because like we said, tonight was a big night in the world of sports and pop culture, and we got to bring it to you. So the road to WrestleMania has begun, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that in the Ringside Wrap as the weeks lead up to that big day down in New Orleans. But for now, we're going to call it a show. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Buenas noches, El Torito. If you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS underscore POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.